When Islamic State terrorists killed James Foley earlier this week, they said it was in retaliation for American military action in Iraq. The U.S. has conducted around 100 airstrikes, and the White House says those strikes will continue. So far, at least, the U.S. is the only Western power intervening in Iraq, but somewhat supportive comments came this week from an unexpected source, the Vatican. On a return flight from South Korea, Pope Francis spoke to reporters about the situation in Iraq. John Allen was on that flight. He's an associate editor for the Boston Globe, and he says the Pope's comments amounted to a cautious yellow light for intervention.
Basically, what the Pope said was that it is legitimate to stop an unjust aggressor. But he cautioned that that does not always mean dropping bombs. And in any event, he said it would be better for this sort of thing to be done under the warrant of UN authorization. So at the end of it, you would have to say it was a kind of balanced, mixed verdict on what the U.S. is doing to try to stop the ISIS forces in northern Iraq.
Was it a break from previous Vatican policy?
Historically, and I mean in recent history, the Vatican has been bitterly critical of any U.S. Use of force in the Middle East. With the two Gulf Wars, both in 91 and 2003, John Paul II was kind of the champion of the moral opposition to those wars. So in that context, you would have to say this was much more approving.
Well, and in fact, Pope Francis just last year was very outspoken and even mobilized a day of prayer for peace to oppose U.S. intervention in Syria, yes?
Yeah, that's right. But I think the relevant difference is that when the Vatican has opposed Western use of force in the Middle East in the past, it's primarily because they've been worried about the aftermath. I mean, the reason that they were opposed to trying to bring down the regime of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, for example, or Bashar al-Assad in Syria, was the fear that what would follow would be the rise of an Islamic theocracy in which religious minorities and Christians in particular would have bullseyes on their backs. Well, there's no longer any need to be worried about the aftermath because that is the present reality. In northern Iraq, you have an estimated 100,000 Christians that have been driven from their homes and are now living as refugees. Hundreds, at least, have been killed. For the first time in more than 1,200 years, there is no Catholic Mass being celebrated in the city of Mosul in northern Iraq, and that's because all the Christians are in exile. I think the Vatican is no longer primarily concerned about some theoretical future scenario that might follow a military intervention. They're much more concerned with trying to stop the carnage in the here and now. And, of course, not just for the Christians. They want to make the point that it's all minority groups that are at risk.
John, is it possible to say whether this statement from Pope Francis would presage what he would say about future conflict? Does this set a precedent?
Well, I think the Pope is trying to be very careful not to set a sweeping precedent of approval for military action every time it's being justified in the name of protecting some civilian population. But that said, I think what it does illustrate is that although the Vatican and the Catholic Church is obviously in favor of peace, they are not committed to pacifism. And there will be cases going forward in which civilian populations are getting their teeth kicked in. There seems to be no other way to bring that to a halt other than the use of force. In those limited sets of circumstances, I don't think you're going to see the Vatican standing in the way.
That's John Allen. He's an associate editor with the Boston Globe and a longtime Vatican watcher. John, thank you.
You're very welcome.
The Reverend Carlton Lee is pastor of the Flood Christian Church in St. Louis. I spoke with him about how his city can move forward from the events of the past few weeks, and I began by asking him what Bible passage he will take as the text for his sermon this Sunday morning.
I'm actually going to be preaching out of Numbers, the 14th chapter, I think around the 8th verse, and the title of my message this week is going to be, Why Am I Still Here?
Who is the I in there?
It really is just a personal thing, not just particularly for me, but for everyone. Why are we still dealing with injustice? Why are we still yet dealing with where we can't get along? Why are we dealing with black-on-black crime? Why are we dealing with impoverished neighborhoods? Why aren't we doing what we should do to come out of that mindset? So when I ask the question as to why am I, that I is particularly for that person, and it fits whatever corridor of life they're in.
Am I right that that chapter deals with a lot of discontent on the part of the Israelites? Unrest in the community, I guess?
Absolutely.
Do you think Ferguson is ready or almost ready, perhaps, to move forward from Michael Brown's death?
Absolutely not, because unfortunately, this has been a brew that has been going on for a while. And so they're not ready to come out of this situation. They're not ready to leave it alone. They are ready to confront this issue. This is more so, as I've been calling it the last couple of days here, the new civil rights movement. It's not just necessarily a race thing. It's a more of an injustice thing. It has no color. One of the things that we're doing is we are reaching across denomination lines, cultural lines, colors lines, gender lines. We're reaching across and we're reaching out to all of our brothers and sisters that are standing for justice, and we're coming together collectively.
The next big event to come, in which everybody will be thinking about what's going to happen, is Michael Brown's funeral. I assume that you all have been making extensive plans for that.
There are tons of plans that are in place because we've heard that several extremist groups were coming to protest at the funeral. So there's plans in place to make sure that the crowd remains calm, to make sure that nobody's being harassed, and it's a very peaceful ceremony for them.
So your hope is that it should be a quiet, religious ceremony for this young man?
I have, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind, believe that it is going to happen that way. It will be very peaceful. He will be laid to rest. His family will be able to mourn, and they will have the community there to mourn. And I believe the nation as a whole will begin to mourn the death of another innocent, not just black man, but another innocent young man.
Reverend Carlton Lee is pastor of the Flood Christian Church in St. Louis. Reverend Lee, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Two of the biggest industries in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, are agriculture and tourism, and neither would be so successful without the Amish. But there's a growing backlash against what locals call Amish exploitation, fueled by cable reality TV shows like Amish Mafia and, yes, Breaking Amish. Marie Cusick of member station WITF reports.
It's no secret many reality TV shows bear little resemblance to reality. That's certainly the case with the Discovery Channel's hit show Amish Mafia.
The mafia operates outside of Amish law, and the elders basically just look the other way.
In reality, the Amish don't like to be photographed and rarely speak out publicly. The show is filmed on location in the heart of Pennsylvania Dutch country, Lancaster County. It shows Amish youth in rebellion, racing horse and buggies and carrying guns. A man named Lebanon Levi is depicted as the mafia's ringleader.
Half the people in town think Levi's a saint.
I brought some money to help pay the hospital bill.
I know that his generosity doesn't come without a price.
With the show's success, other spin-offs followed, including Breaking Amish and Return to Amish. Amish scholar Donald Crabill of Elizabethtown College says many of the people on the shows were raised in the community but never officially joined the religion, and the violent images are completely at odds with the group's pacifist beliefs.
There's no Amish mafia. There never was. The whole thing is a fabrication in the minds of the producers.
Discovery Communications declined to comment for this story, and the New York City-based production company, Hot Snakes Media, which created the shows, did not respond to repeated requests to comment. Earlier this summer, when Lancaster filmmaker Mary Haverstick heard there would be another new spinoff called Amish Haunting, she got fed up and started a Facebook page to oppose the shows called Respect Amish.
And I kind of put out there the opinion that I think so many Lancastrians are thinking, which is, what in the world are these shows doing?
The Facebook page rapidly grew into a movement. Groups ranging from the Lancaster Chamber of Commerce to the Tourism Board and local council of churches voiced support. And Haverstick started to hear from members of the Amish community.
The Amish elder who told me that these shows make them look like garbage. When he said that to me with clear pain in his voice, I think it's a moment I'll never forget, and I knew right then that we were on the right track.
Within a few weeks, every single politician representing Lancaster at the local, state, and national level voiced support for the Respect Amish movement, including Pennsylvania's two U.S. senators and governor. Dan Stoltzfus is an Amish man who has a baked goods stand at Lancaster City's farmers market. He's never watched the shows, since the Amish typically shun modern conveniences like electricity, but he's aware of them and finds the portrayals offensive.
It's all fake. It's not the real thing.
Yet some people are still confused. The Lancaster City Police Department had to come up with a standard form explaining the shows are fake in response to repeated questions from viewers about why they haven't done more to combat the mafia. Amish scholar Donald Crable says he doesn't object to negative portrayals of the religion. After all, the Amish are humans who sometimes commit crimes.
But in this particular case, Amish mafia is a deliberate misrepresentation of their religion. To me, that is a line in the sand that Amish mafia has crossed and never apologized for. There's no shame involved in it for them.
He thinks the Amish are an easy target because they believe in turning the other cheek. Meanwhile, filmmaker Mary Haverstick wants to shut down the productions. She's asked for a meeting with the Discovery Channel and says her group's next move will be to put pressure on the show's sponsors. For NPR News, I'm Marie Cusick in Lancaster.